Friday. Maybe you'll send a few DMs. But if you worked in the Australian Defence Force, you could be sending critical intelligence that protects Australia. Make your impact. Search ADF Careers.
You're listening to SBS News.
From the SBS Newsroom, I'm Angelica Waite. Of life law and regulation for the Australian Centre for Health Law Research at the Queensland University of Technology.
The Northern Territory was the first to introduce the idea of voluntary assisted dying in Australia back in the mid-1990s. But it's
only was the first in Australia, but it had the first voluntary assisted dying system to come into force in the world. But in the mid-1990s, when the law was passed, the federal government decided to use its constitutional power to stop territories legislating on this. So they passed a law which effectively overrode the Northern Territory legislation, and that law remained in force until 2022, when the Commonwealth Parliament decided to allow territories to make their own decisions on this. And from that time forward, the Northern Territory was able to legislate, and it did. It established a process, and the bill that we saw pass into law on Thursday.
And why is it significant that they've changed these laws now?
It's significant because for a couple of reasons. One, I think Northern Territory is the last jurisdiction in Australia to have these laws. All seven states and territories, the ACT, had independently examined the issue, and all of their parliaments had decided to pass laws on this. So the fact that the first was now able to do that and complete that national picture, because I think that's the other thing that's significant. Although the law in the Northern Territory has passed, it's not yet in force, but once it does come into force after an implementation period in early 2028, that will mean Australians, regardless of where they live, all have access to the choice of voluntary assisted dying.
And under these
Australian model that's been developed over time with those seven other jurisdictions. So eligibility criteria include being an adult with decision-making capacity. They have to be acting voluntarily and without coercion. And there's also residency requirements at both the national and the territory level as well. The person also has to have a disease, illness or medical condition that's advanced, progressive and expected to cause death within a 12-month period. And also that condition's causing suffering that the person finds to be intolerable. So those are the core eligibility criteria, that they have to be assessed by two independent doctors who have to be specially trained. Those two doctors have to agree those eligibility criteria are met. And there's also an oversight board that will be established, again, reflecting what normally happens in other Australian jurisdictions. That body will examine each of the cases of voluntary assisted dying to ensure compliance with the law and to monitor the system overall to make sure things are operating as intended.
And how do these laws compare to other states and territories? What are the similarities?
The similarities, I think, rest quite a bit with the eligibility criteria that I mentioned before. There is a very consistent pattern across the country. Perhaps one thing to note is that time frame, that there's been some variation nationally across that. There's three broad models. Victoria, which had the first law, it said that people needed to be expected to die within 6 months, or if it was a neurodegenerative condition, it could be 12 months, and most of the country followed that lead. Queensland took a slightly different approach and said 12 months for all, and that's the approach, obviously, that the Northern Territory will fit as well. And the third is reflected in the Australian Capital Territory. Its law is limited to people who are approaching the end of life, but there isn't a specific time frame imposed there. So the Northern Territory, I think, would fall broadly within the middle of those three categories, if you like, with that 12 months expectation. So very, very similar nationally in terms of eligibility criteria.
And how do the laws in the Northern Territory differ to other states and territories?
The one point that is probably of significance and was certainly discussed extensively in the parliamentary debates is the question about whether or not voluntary assisted dying can be raised by doctors or others. Victoria, as I mentioned, was the first law to pass in Australia, and it had what's commonly been called a gag clause, and that basically says that doctors or healthcare workers generally are not able to raise the topic of voluntary assisted dying with patients. Interestingly, South Australia copied the Victorian Act, and both of them have that. But the rest of the country has tended to move away from that. The evidence has been that this makes it hard for patients to know about voluntary assisted dying. Some of the QUT research that we've done suggests that we did a study in Queensland. So I think this would broadly reflect the national picture that only a third of people knew that voluntary assisted dying was legal. So you can imagine if you don't know that voluntary assisted dying is legal, how would you know to raise the topic? So other jurisdictions moved away from that, and indeed Victoria in its recent review said that it passed laws to repeal that as well, which will take an effect next year. So the Northern Territory took the approach of including this gag clause. So under their laws, healthcare workers cannot raise the topic of voluntary assisted dying, heavily debated in the parliament, but ultimately there was not support to change it. So that's one of the key differences that we will see.
And the Northern Territory population has the highest proportion of Indigenous people in any state and state or territory, and almost half of the territory's population lives rurally or remotely. How do these new laws take these factors into account?
The process of passing the law included an expert advisory group panel, which produced a report which thought deeply about the very specific and particular context in the Northern Territory. And it was followed by a parliamentary committee, which also spent a great deal of time thinking about what the particular needs of the Northern Territory population would be. And as you noted, 30% of the Northern Territory population are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, speaking over 200 languages. So some of the things in the Northern Territory law aim to make sure that it's culturally appropriate. And one of those is that a patient is able to make their formal request for voluntary assisted dying, either in writing or by video. So that the formal request is effectively, there's a number of requests that have to be made, but this is the one that's documented, where there's witnesses and really making sure this is what the person wanted. So in other jurisdictions, that has to be in writing, but there was an option recognising that that may not be a culturally appropriate or preferred for some people in the Northern Territory, that there is scope to do that in a video recording. One of the other things that we saw in the law that's different from elsewhere is that it specifically allows family members or a person with cultural authority to be included in the decision at the person's request, so that the person seeking voluntary assisted dying has to say, look, I would like to involve some others in the decision, and the decision must remain the person's themselves. It's very, very clear that the Act actually really specifies that the final choice about seeking voluntary assisted dying has to rest with the person themselves, but recognising that there are different models of decision making, that the legislation specifically allows that as well.
And are there any other calls for changes that could improve the cultural safety of these laws or to make them more culturally accessible? Are there other calls for change here?
I think the shift now will be, given that the Act is passed, is to really focus on implementation and think very carefully how that can be done in a way that's culturally safe and culturally appropriate. The implementation processes across other states and the ACT, of course, will be helpful exercises for the Northern Territory to learn from and see how that's been done. But I think there'll be a very clear focus to make sure, because it's not just about what the law says, it's about how the law works in practice, the resources provided to support decision making, and the structures and other processes to make sure that that voluntary assisted dying is appropriate for the people who want to make this choice. So I anticipate that implementation process will have that at the forefront.
And there have been calls for the federal ban on using telehealth to discuss voluntary assisted dying to be lifted. Can you tell me a bit about why this is? Why are people calling for this change?
The Commonwealth Criminal Code, this was an amendment to that some approximately just a bit under 20 years ago, designed to deal with internet chat rooms, cyberbullying leading to assisted suicide, those sorts of things. It was not, it was passed well before we had voluntary assisted dying laws in Australia and not intended to deal with that. But it still has captured some of that. Very, very sick patients or health practitioners are having to travel sometimes extraordinary distances. And we can think about how that might play out in a place like the Northern Territory to have conversations about a voluntary assisted dying to be assessed in terms of eligibility. So there have been calls for this ban on telehealth to be repealed. It has caused in other jurisdictions lots of suffering, delays, people missing out on voluntary assisted dying, and also what I think should be sort of described as just pure waste of very finite health resources. We have doctors, for example, hopping in a car and driving thousands of kilometres to see a patient over the course of a weekend or a couple of days, and then driving that back as well. This is not to say that the issue of telehealth and how it's used appropriately, clinically appropriately, in voluntary assisted dying shouldn't be regulated. And I think this is the sort of thing that would fit very neatly into the state health guidelines, which already regulate the different aspects and clinical judgments that are required in voluntary assisted dying. I think the issue of telehealth and how it's best regulated and what things are required requires a careful consideration of what are the core things about voluntary assisted dying that require to be face-to-face and what could safely be done by telehealth. I think in other clinical settings, we've had groups of clinicians, regulators and others sit around a table and work out collectively, you know, what the appropriate path is on that. So I think what's needed there is a process which includes VAD clinicians, which includes health system administrators, which includes those who know how regulation works, to try and work out what the optimal way to manage telehealth is. One that's been put forward, for example, is that I mentioned before, there's a requirement for two eligibility assessments. One approach that's been put forward, which I think is sensible, is that at least one of those needs to be done face-to-face. Perhaps with the caveat that if someone was just unable to travel, that there may be scope for exemptions, but the idea that generally one of the two eligibility assessments are being done face-to-face, I think is important.
Friday. Maybe you'll send a few DMs, but if you worked in the Australian Defence Force, you could be sending critical intelligence that protects Australia. Make your impact. Search ADF Careers.
And what about outside of telehealth? Are there any other key changes that advocates are calling for to do with voluntary assisted dying laws?
One is, I think with the passing of the law in the Northern Territory, the whole country will have voluntary assisted dying laws. Each of those jurisdictions, each of the states, each of the territories has a local state or territory residence requirement. So I think that becomes hard to justify now that we have all jurisdictions which have the ability to have access voluntary assisted dying. When it was just one, the concern was that everyone would go to Victoria, and so we needed to make sure this was just for Victorians. But with voluntary assisted dying being available nationally, I don't think it makes sense to have those sorts of residency requirements. And we certainly don't regulate health services like that, other health services like that. There's not this sort of magical line when you get to a particular state boundary as to what healthcare you can or cannot have. And another deals with remuneration of health practitioners. A lot of the work that practitioners do in providing VAD for patients is done above workload, out of hours, or unremunerated. So I think having a system which fairly pays clinicians for the work they do, I think is just generally appropriate. And we know that's not the case with voluntary assisted dying. So that's another, like the others in the other jurisdictions around Australia, was obviously passed, but its operation is paused until an implementation period has passed. And generally that's been 18 months in Australia. And the goal is to try and establish the infrastructure that you need for the system to work safely, so that's ready from the very start. So that includes some core work like developing training that all medical practitioners and other health practitioners who are involved in voluntary assisted dying has to complete. So the theory behind that training is that the community can have confidence that everyone who's involved in voluntary assisted dying knows what their rights and responsibilities are and knows how the law works so it operates safely. So that's one body of work. There's also the development of clinical guidelines, which I mentioned before, the development of medication protocols, IT systems, and of course the oversight board that I mentioned before would need to be established. That's a pretty significant body of work. 18 months sounds like a long period of time, but there is quite a bit of structural work to do there. And as I said at the earlier in our discussion, it'll be an opportunity to learn from the national experience. But of course, there's particular considerations in the territory to make sure that this is implemented in a way that works for Territorians.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Yeah, no, thank you for the chat.
Get ahead with a career in the Australian Defence Force. Home ownership. Get help paying for it. Healthcare assistance for your family. Make your impact. Search ADF Careers.